Ukraine's President Zelensky and local officials in the Luhansk region say Russia has started a large-scale offensive in the eastern Donbas region. Iran's foreign minister calls for protection of the country's diplomatic missions in Afghanistan, saying enemies seek to cause tensions. And Palestinian resistance groups in Gaza say their defenses repelled intruding Israeli aircraft. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gizumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. The war in Ukraine enters the third month. Russia's airstrikes have targeted a logistics center in the Ukrainian army near the city of Lviv. Russia's defense ministry says a large-scale number of foreign-made arms were stored in the targeted Ukrainian logistics center. The ministry says a repair center for Tokayu missiles in the city of Dnipro has also been destroyed. Meanwhile, the Pentagon says the first shipments of a new U.S. military package have arrived at Ukraine's border. Moscow had warned against unpredictable consequences if Washington continued supplying arms to Kiev. Ukrainian officials say Russian troops have taken control of the town of Ekhermina in the eastern Donbas region, where Russian forces have reportedly started a new offensive. The Ukrainian president and local officials say Russia is seeking to destroy Donbas in a large-scale offensive that has begun there.
Russian troops are preparing for an offensive operation in the east of our country. It will begin in the near future. They want to literally finish off and destroy Donbas, destroy everything that once gave glory to this industrial region.
Vladimir Zelensky once again called for more sanctions on Russia's energy sector. He said the need for an embargo on Russian oil is growing every day. The Ukrainian president said Russia is openly using energy to destabilize Western societies. Moscow has pointed the incriminating finger at European countries, saying that their effort to cut the dependence on Russian oil and gas would negatively impact the global market. Russia says there is no replacement for the gas in Europe under the current circumstances. We talked to investigative journalist Tony Gosling in our special coverage of the war. He says Russia has managed to deal serious blows to the Ukrainian army.
Well, look, there's two things to say about this, really. One is the situation on the ground, and I suppose the other is the way it's been interpreted around the world, because different parts of the world are seeing what's going on in Ukraine in very different ways, because that's the way the media are spinning it. It's very difficult to find balanced reporting, because most parts of the world are either on one side or the other. But what we've seen here in London on the British media is really appalling. But in our newspapers and on the television, really what we're getting is only one side, and it really is, it's almost like a full-on propaganda war is going on, almost like it's, say, World War II, the sort of propaganda we would have got in World War II, where it's all very one-sided. But on the ground, and I think, you know, obviously things will be won and lost on the ground. They won't just be, you know, in people's hearts and minds. And so the change in manoeuvre of tactics by the Russians does seem to, there have been a few important changes in what they've done, because they've succeeded in the first part of their plan, I think, which was basically to separate and break up the Ukrainian army so that it couldn't really communicate and it couldn't move as one against Russia and to attack on many fronts.
Two British fighters captured in Ukraine by Russian forces have appeared on Russian state TV asking London to exchange them for a Ukrainian ally of the Russian president.
I remember seeing in the news when Viktor Medvedchuk was arrested for his political affiliations. If Boris Johnson really does care, like he says he does, about British citizens, then he would help pressure Zelensky to do the right thing and return Viktor to his family and return us to our families.
The other British fighter made the same plea before the camera, asking British Prime Minister Boris Johnson to arrange for his exchange. The two Britons who have fought for the Ukrainian army in the port city of Mariupol were referring to Viktor Medvedchuk, who is the leader of Ukraine's opposition platform for Life Party and an ally of the Russian President Vladimir Putin. Earlier, Ukraine's security forces released video showing him asking to be swapped for, quote, defenders of Mariupol and its citizens. He made the appeal to both Putin and his Ukrainian counterpart, Volodymyr Zelensky. He also has for many years advocated closer ties between Moscow and Kiev. Iran's foreign ministry has called on the acting Taliban government to take necessary measures to protect Iran's diplomatic missions and staff in Afghanistan. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark in a phone call with the acting foreign minister of the Afghan interim government, Amir Khan Muttaqi. The top Iranian diplomat said that the two countries' enemies seek to cause tensions in the relations between Iran and its eastern border through fake propaganda. He said Iran has hosted millions of Afghans over the past four decades and pursues a positive and constructive approach to Afghanistan. Muttaqi, for his part, expressed regret over the recent attacks on the Iranian diplomatic premises in the capital Kabul and the eastern city of Herat. He assured Amir Abdullahian about the security of Iran's diplomatic missions and staff in Afghanistan. And Iran's army has held a military parade to mark the National Army Day. The parade, held annually on April 18th, featured the latest indigenously produced military equipment of the army. Addressing the event, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said Iranian army forces will target, quote, the center of the Zionist regime if it makes the slightest move against the Islamic Republic. Yusuf Chalodi.
Heavy stumps of marching soldiers and convoys of Iranian-made weapons paraded in Tehran and across the country on the National Army Day. All of the four branches of the military took part in the key parade, held at the presence of army officials and Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi. Addressing the ceremony, the president hailed the army's achievements despite the U.S. sanctions.
The defense industry fared the best amid the sanctions atmosphere. The Islamic Republic's army achieved significant capabilities during this period. Not only did the army defend the nation during the Iraqi imposed war on Iran, but it has stood with the people and for the people in all areas.
The parade featured the latest military achievements and weapons produced by the Iranian army, including radars, tanks, armored vehicles, drones, fighter jets, and missiles. This year's highlights were FAT-360 surface-to-surface missile, Labeg precision strike rockets, and Desfoul and Majid air defense systems. The Islamic Republic says it produces over 80% of its needed military hardware indigenously. In his address to the parade, the Iranian president said the country's show of power sends messages both to friends and enemies.
The preparedness of the army sends the message of hope to the friends of the Islamic Republic. There's also a message to the enemy. The enemy must know that the military might of our armed forces gives us a deterrent power. They must know that the smallest move made against our country and our nation would be monitored by the sharp eyes of our armed forces.
The National Army Day was designated in 1980, following a historic speech by late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. There, he thanked the army for its role in the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution by announcing neutrality in the conflict between the former Pahlavi regime.
and their revolutionaries.
4 decades of arms embargoes have denied Iran access to even a bullet from other countries. The army says the parades today show that those bans have not harmed Iran's military capability. But in fact, they've been a blessing since they prompted Iran to build up its own military arsenal so that its security is no longer tied to foreign arms. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Palestinian resistance groups in the Gaza Strip say their air defenses repelled intruding Israeli aircraft that targeted an area in the south of the besieged enclave. Israel says the airstrike came in response to a rocket fired into the occupied territories from Gaza. Earlier, we were joined by Ashraf Shannon for more.
Israeli fighter jets have attacked an area in this west of the southern Gaza Strip town of Khan Yunis, close to the Mediterranean. That location belongs to Hamas's military wing, the Izzeddin al-Qassam brigades. The bombing took place while Palestinians in Gaza were just getting ready to have their pre-dawn meals to prepare for the fasting for the holy month of Ramadan. In recent weeks, the Israeli regime has escalated attacks on Palestinians, whether in Al-Quds, in the occupied West Bank, or Gaza. Historically, the Israeli regime increases attacks on Palestinians during the holy month of Ramadan. We have also to remember that last year, almost also during the month of Ramadan, that was the 11-day Israeli war on Gaza, where scores of people were killed and injured, including dozens of children and women. And also earlier on Monday, Israeli tanks made a limited incursion east of the northern Gaza Strip town of Beth Hanun. And also tonight, a young lady in the occupied West Bank succumbed to her wounds, who she was shot earlier by Israeli forces. So we see in recent weeks dozens of Palestinians being killed by Israeli regime forces, an increase in the hostilities against the Palestinians in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, in Al-Quds, and especially in Al-Quds as Palestinians are observing the holy month of Ramadan, which is one of the holiest months of the Islamic calendar.
A young Palestinian girl who was shot and injured by Israeli forces during last week's attacks in the occupied West Bank has succumbed to her injuries. Palestinian Health Ministry says 18-year-old Hanan Mahmoud Kador succumbed to gunshot wounds that she sustained during an Israeli raid in the city of Jenin. A spokesman for the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas described the killing as a heinous crime. He said the Zionist regime will not be able to undermine the determination of Palestinian people in their struggle to achieve their legitimate rights. The northern West Bank, a city of Jenin, particularly its refugee camp, is known as a stronghold for an emerging armed resistance movement. Since earlier this month, Israeli forces have been attacking the camp as well as other cities in the occupied West Bank. The raids have left a large number of Palestinians dead or wounded, while causing a sharp escalation in tensions across the occupied territories. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has held a gathering in the Lebanese capital Beirut to commemorate Palestinian Prisoners' Day. Speakers from the resistance groups have stressed that armed resistance is the only hope for liberating prisoners. Our correspondent Maryam Sully has more.
Dozens of people gathered in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, to mark Palestinian Prisoners' Day, a day when resistance factions and their supporters stand in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails.
On this day, which marks the Day of Palestinian Prisoners, I am certain that the people of the Arab and Muslim worlds, as we see in this gathering, will show the true unity with the resistance and the path of the resistance, especially with the issue of the prisoners and Al-Quds, which are the emblem of the Palestinian struggle.
Hezbollah Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem stressed that one cannot be truly with Palestine if they are not with the resistance.
It has become clear that whoever is with Palestine should be with the resistance. Anyone who has declared that he is with Palestine but hasn't taken one practical step in supporting the resistance is not truly with Palestine. Military resistance comes first. The other forms of resistance back and help to serve the actual resistance with arms.
He recalled that after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, late Imam Khomeini took the decision to close the Israeli embassy and reinstate the Palestinian embassy before declaring he was with Palestine. Liberating Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails has become a struggle for all resistance factions as it is linked directly to the Palestinian cause. They stress that liberating prisoners can only be realized completely by liberating Palestine. Officials of Palestinian resistance groups Hamas and Islamic Jihad considered that history has proven that only armed struggle can be a path to liberating both Al-Quds and the prisoners who continue to suffer from Israel's aggressive policies. More than 4,400 Palestinian prisoners are currently held in Israeli jails. Minors and women are among 500 detainees under the so-called administrative detention policy, under which they are held without charge or trial for an indefinite time period. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Iran's top human rights official has slammed the plan to burn the Holy Quran by a far-right group in Sweden. Kazem Gharibabadi says the country is turning into a prison for Muslims with the government's support. In a tweet, the Secretary of Iran's High Council for Human Rights said religious intolerance is raging in Europe. Gharibabadi said the desecration of religious sanctities is under no circumstances acceptable. Several days of unrest in Sweden have left 26 police officers and 14 civilians injured. The unrest was triggered when the far-right Stram Kurs party had held a rally in a Muslim-dominated area of Sweden and tried to burn a copy of the Holy Quran. The party is known for its anti-immigrant and anti-Islam stance and intends to mobilize support ahead of the September elections. The group plans to publicly burn more copies of the Holy Quran. Police blame the violence on criminals who have no links to the demonstrations and are taking advantage of the situation. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Palestinian combatant groups campaigning for liberation of their homeland should know that they're not alone in this holy struggle, says Kayhan, international staff writer, in an article published under the heading, Time for Practical Steps to End Zionist Sacrilege in Palestine. Stay tuned for more. Whatever the facts and behind-the-scenes ploys that could be traced to corridors of power in Washington, On Friday, April 15th, the sanctity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque was again defiled in the fasting month of Ramadan by the dirty Israeli regime troops who disrupted a peaceful gathering of Muslim worshippers after the early dawn prayer by attacking them with batons, tear gas, and rubber bullets to injure at least 158 Palestinians. As usual, the Muslim world verbally condemned the latest sacrilege at Al-Aqsa Mosque, but without any plans for any coordinated practical moves on the ground. To peals of laughter at this impotence from the Zionists and the Americans, now joined by the treacherous Arab clan leaders from the Persian Gulf. The only thing that is worrying the Israelis in their merry killing of Palestinians over the past few days in the West Bank prior to Friday's foray into the sacred precincts of the Al-Aqsa Mosque is the statement from Gaza by the Palestinian freedom-fighting movements, including Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and others who have the rockets to respond to such acts of terrorism. They had made the Zionists taste Palestinian retaliation last year in the operations codenamed Sword of Beitul Muqaddas following the Israeli atrocities in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, and could now use some of their rapidly improving projectiles to target the Zionist criminals. The wording of the warning is clear. We will draw the line again in defense of Beitul Muqaddas, and we will launch a new era, weapons for weapons, and force will only be met by force, and we will defend the sanctity of Al-Aqsa by all our might. The Palestinian combatant groups campaigning for liberation of their homeland should know that they're not alone in this holy struggle. Lebanon's legendary anti-terrorism movement, the Hezbollah, with its sophisticated arsenal, is also with them, and so is Yemen's popular Ansarullah movement, whose state-of-the-art means of defense will definitely be at the service of the oppressed Palestinian people. Then there is the Hashd al-Sha'bi, or the Popular Mobilization Force of Iraq, whose groups such as Ashab al-Haq and Harakat Hezbollah on Nujaba have already made public their vowed vengeance against the Zionist regime's crimes against Islamic sanctities. One of the statements from Baghdad reads, Iraqi resistance forces are fully prepared to do whatever is necessary to ensure the continuation of the Palestinian struggle until the usurping Israeli regime is annihilated. The Islamic Republic of Iran definitely supports the mobilization of forces all over the Muslim world for the cherished goal of liberation of Islam's former Qibla, or direction of prayer, and has made it clear to the UN that the only peaceful and democratic solution to the chronic question of Palestine is a referendum for one single country and government, and the exit of all Jews of foreign origin from the land.
Food for thought.
Salam friends. We invite you to savor some fresh food for thought in the form of a maxim from Imam Hasan Mujtaba, peace upon him. Generosity is to begin with providing the gift before it is asked from you, and serve food in times of famine, while meanness is the fewness of giving and the speech of obscene language.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents. humanity.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين. Dear listeners, welcome to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program For Humanity. This is Sheikh Ali Hemani, and the segment is Hollywood, Conditioning of the Subconscious Mind and Extermination of Human Rights. So the whole discussion we were having so far was about Milgram's experiment and how an authoritative figure can dictate what needs to be done in your life. This would mean that the free will and the conscious decision-making that people have is being hampered and is being exterminated. And you would notice this in the current era. This Milgram's experiment and the outcome of it is extensively used in media. This is what we discussed earlier. But this is also used extensively by the political figures, the political bodies, or the politicians in the country, right? You would notice this in the current era of the vaccination, the COVID-19 vaccinations. So people wanted to have their say, their free will, their choice whether to get vaccinated or not to get vaccinated. But you would notice that politicians or the authoritative figures who are the doctors, could be the puppets of the government or, conducting independent research on the vaccinations. When they come around and tell the people that you need to get vaccinated to prevent yourself from falling sick, you would see that 80% to 90% of the people listen to them. Even they don't understand the side effects of the vaccine or the benefits of the vaccine, just because an authoritative figure has told them to go get vaccinated, they go and get vaccinated. And then you will see that there are one category of people who wants to use their free will and say that we don't want to get vaccinated. So this Milgram's experiment gave a finding in the hands of the media and the political world that they, being the authoritative figure, they can dictate their ideology, they can dictate their worldview, they can tell the people what to do and what not to do. Which also leads to the concept of mass control, that how the politicians and media uses these techniques to do mass control, to control the population of a whole country with the help of one single advertisement, with the help of one single message, with the help of one single movie. All right. Now, the big question that arises here is, why do they want to condition us? Why do they want to control us? Why do they want to take charge of our free will, and they want to decide for us? Because when this happens, when they are able to tell us what to do, what not to do, what to pick, what not to pick, then we become predictable for them. Because then they would know that how I'm going to behave when I wake up, how am I going to behave when I'm driving my car, how am I going to behave when I'm in the bank, how am I going to behave when I go to work, how am I going to behave when my child goes to school, when I'm left alone in the house, how my child is going to behave in the school, in the playgrounds, when he's playing ball with the with his team, when he's playing rugby or soccer with his team, and when he's attending classes, or even when he's out there shopping. So that would give them the level of predictability that would allow them to predict human behavior in different scenarios, in different places, with different age levels and different age limits. Inshallah, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and discuss this further.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were talking about Milgram's experiment and how this experiment gives the power in the hands of media and politicians to dictate their ideology and worldview to people. And the question that was raised was that, what is what's in it for them? What's their benefit to do this? And then we said that it gives them the predictability. It gives them the control. It gives them the ability to predict the behavior of people around them, that how people would behave when they go for shopping, how they would behave when they go to work, how they would behave when they're driving, so on and so forth. Now, when a person is predictable, then that gives you an upper hand on the person. It gives you that upper hand to be able to pre-plan the behavior of the person and then plan your next set of moves. This predictability gives both the authorities, media, politicians, and other authorities, the ability to maintain upper hand and maintain their level of power upon us, to enforce and exert their power upon us, particularly the corporate world. Their focus is that when we can predict certain behavior of certain people, then we can make profit out of it. We can make money out of it. It gives us the power and authority. Look at Facebook, how Facebook profiles each member when they log in, when they register, and they update their data there, that how they wake up, where do they go for vacation, what coffee do they drink, what brand of clothes do they buy, where do they study, what college do they go to, where do they work. All this adds up, and Facebook is easily able to create a profile for you. And based on that profile, they also know how you're going to behave, how you're going to react to certain messages, how you're going to react to certain news, how you're going to react to certain actions taken by the government. And this allows them to take stronger, deeper decisions and control the mass behavior, control the people's behavior. And not just that, they use a technique called follow your favorite one. So what they do as part of their technique, for example, look at the Facebook, look at social media, look at TikTok, look at YouTube. What they do is they tell you to follow someone that you like. And on the other hand, there are these whole set of influencers that come in. If you look at the social media today, it's being ruled by the influencers. You've got hundreds and thousands of influencers making it big time on the media, on YouTube. Everyone, each of them having 60 million views, 65 million views, 100 million views, right? For example, Mr. Beast, right? In one of the interviews, I remember, he was being asked, how much money do you make every month from YouTube? And he said, I make $4 million from YouTube. And then he goes on to say that I spend $3 million in making videos, right? So that shows that the amount of effort, the amount of energy, and the amount of money that is being spent to make these videos, to influence, and that's why he's called influencer, to influence others, so that when he influences them, the media pays them. When he influences them, the corporate world pays him, so that he can continue to influence them, continue to tell them what to do, continue to tell them what not to do, continue to tell them how to live, what to pick, what to choose, what to wear, what not to wear, right? And this is what he's getting paid for. He is getting paid for promoting stuff that people are not in need of. So here's the set of influencers influencing us, telling us what to do, telling us what not to do. So this is where the Milgram experiment fits into the picture, that it gives certain power to these authoritative figures who come around and tell us what to do and what not to do. And these influencers are the ones who are dictating the terms to our youths and teens in today's world. Inshallah, we'll continue in the next episode. Until then, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa alihi.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Magic returns to Belgium with a purple carpet of bluebells covering the undergrowth of Hallerbos woods near Brussels. Each spring, this beech forest turns into a bluebell spectacular, turning the area into a natural wonderland. Millions of these blooming flowers sprout up across the 550-hectare woods, filling the air with their sweet aroma. The short but enchanting blooming phase offers nature enthusiasts a one-of-a-kind experience.
It is an outstanding and magical place because whenever we come, there's an amazing atmosphere. The sunrise was truly beautiful this morning, and we know this offers the opportunity to take great photos and decorate our house. It is a great comfort during these tough times.
Visitors can stroll the winding paths and watch rabbits and deer wandering through the woods. The forest floor blooms for a period of 7 to 10 days. After this time, leaves begin to grow on the trees above them, blocking the sunlight from reaching the flowers. The phenomenon of bluebell forest is not uncommon in Europe, but the Hallerbos greenery is unique for the density and beauty of its blossoms.
A batch of autonomous delivery vehicles has been provided to facilitate personnel and volunteers in the streets and communities of Shanghai. The self-driving vehicles distribute supplies to residents in the Chinese megacity, which is now hit hard by the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. The vehicles reduce person-to-person contact and largely lower the risk of infection. A community served by the distribution station has more than 30 apartment buildings and nearly 3,000 residents. The weight of each order is more than 5 kilograms, which puts great pressure on the volunteers to deliver. 49 autonomous delivery vehicles have been sent to communities, colleges, and hospitals in Shanghai to support anti-pandemic and supply work. Sunny skies and spring temperatures made for the perfect setting for the 65th birthday of Fatu, the world's oldest gorilla living at Berlin Zoo. At this age, the Western lowland gorilla is what Berlin Zoo calls almost something of a legend. Gorillas living in the wild have a life expectancy of about 40 years, and at 65, she has been the world's oldest living gorilla for a while. 65 is absolutely extraordinary, and that obviously needs to be celebrated in style.
They mainly get vegetables, and the sugar they receive at most is fruit sugar, and that's what she saw for today in the shape of raspberries and blueberries. They were the decoration on rice cake made of boiled rice, a thin layer of rice and some curd so it sticks together. The bottom was made of a lot of green stuff, then the lion and lettuce.
According to Berlin Zoo, Western lowland gorillas are now an endangered species after their natural habitat was continuously decimated, and therefore fewer and fewer animals live in the tropical rainforest of Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo. World of Opera is opening its doors to the deaf community for the very first time. The Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra has teamed up with the Deaf West Theater to stage a production of Beethoven's only opera, Fidelio, at their home at the Walt Disney Hall. The chorus will be performed by the White Hands Choir, a group from Venezuela consisting of disabled children and young adults who sing as well as sign. The production pairs up a singer and a deaf actor to both inhabit the one role on stage. Having deaf actors perform alongside opera singers, however, has its challenges, not least of which is keeping up the rhythm of the music.
I think probably that there's a lot of tempo that I've been rehearsing. A lot of times when the singers hold the same word, but the next time they say that exact same word in the next few bars, they don't hold it as long. So trying to remember all of those is very difficult. So are they holding this for four beats or two beats? Or what word is this in this thing?
The challenge with opera is that it's very fluid and it's not repetitive. The tempos change throughout it, and night to night it even changes. The conductor, you know, kind of changes how he conducts things each night, and so that is something that is challenging.
The opera singers also give small cues to the actors, like opening a letter or sitting down or standing up, to keep them informed where they are in the piece. The deaf cast use theatrical ASL, or American Sign Language, in the production. DJ Kurs, the producer at the Deaf West Theater, says the performance is a little bit more poetic and a little bit more kind of picturesque.
A startup in the U.S. state of California is turning science fiction into reality by sending tiny robots on a fantastic voyage inside humans to treat brain disorders. The smart cells are small enough to be injected and can be carefully guided through the brain using magnetic coils placed outside of the patient's skull. The coils are linked to a computer that can remotely maneuver the robots through delicate pathways into the affected part of the brain. The micro-robots are also removed by rewinding them through the same route. The developers at Bionaut Labs say these robots are extremely important when it comes to zero-failure sensitive surgeries.
For localized conditions such as cancer tumors, stroke, atherosclerotic plaque buildup, localized pain, and many other conditions, there is a real need to have a micro-robotic, precise, remote-controlled mechanism that can treat a condition only at a specific point and nowhere else.
The startup has already tested the robots on large animals. Inventors hope to use the robot to pierce fluid-filled cysts within the brain when clinical trials on humans begin in 2 years. If approved, they could offer key advantages over more invasive and dangerous treatments for brain disorders.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Floating solar panels help landowners benefit from underused body of water. Now, a German company is covering 14,000 square meters of a lake with these panels, turning it into the biggest solar park in the country. The park is built by a family-owned company called Quartzwerk, which specializes in extracting and processing industrial minerals. The company says it wants to become independent of fossil energy sources amid rising energy prices. The head of the Floating Panel Corporation says they will be generating around 3 million kilowatts per hour of green electricity on the surfaces of Limmersheim Lake in southern Germany.
The
plan can make a super big contribution to the land-neutral energy transition, because here, an unused lake that was previously used for gravel extraction is being converted into a power plant for renewable energy.
Installation and maintenance of the panels are easy and safe, while they also offer a significant reduction in evaporation from the water surface. According to the company, this will save around 1,100 tons of carbon dioxide each year.
A restaurant in the Indonesian capital of Jakarta is taking fine dining to new heights, literally and figuratively, by giving diners a one-of-a-kind experience 50 meters above ground. The restaurant is called Lounge in the Sky. Diners are securely strapped into seats fixed to a table and are hoisted into the air using a heavy-duty lift. First, the gourmet meals are prepared in the main kitchen. Then, the food is loaded onto the platform where the dishes are plated and served to the patrons. The suspended guests are able to take advantage of breathtaking views as they gently rotate at great heights.
At first, it was not easy. I was nervous that I wouldn't be able to swallow the food, let alone drink. But after some time, I could eventually eat. It was thrilling.
While enjoying the meals, the guests use seat belts and the accompanying staff are equipped with safety harnesses. The guests are also briefed on safety regulations before the platform is raised. Diners call the one-hour experience exhilarating and worth the high price. The project developers say the restaurant was aimed at reviving local and international tourism sector after a big slump during the COVID-19 pandemic. The culinary experience is a first in Indonesia and the third in the world after Belgium and Malaysia.
South Koreans are getting outside to enjoy the open air with a local cherry blossom festival in central Seoul. This is while the country has been dealing with an ongoing surge of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. With some performances and the beauty of spring, many people look forward to turning the corner on the pandemic. Frank Smith has a story.
Spring has come to South Korea, and the cherry blossoms are blooming. COVID-19 restrictions on gatherings are finally being eased. And at Ansan Park in central Seoul, a small festival is bringing everyone back out.
I first came here with my friends 4 years ago, but we couldn't come for the past 2 years because of COVID. I was impressed to see so many people no longer being overly careful about COVID. And we're also very happy to be able to attend festivals like this one.
South Koreans have been quite diligent in observing social distancing guidelines and wearing masks. The Omicron variant of COVID-19 has been quite severe here, with cases only recently declining below 200,000 per day. Still, the government's decided to open up. From the open-air stage, Noh Ah Ram and his band entertain a crowd that's anxious to finally get outside and enjoy group activities.
Ever since COVID, and particularly for the entirety of 2021, when the pandemic was at its peak, I have been unable to perform. I felt today was a restart. Spring has come, the weather's great, the blossoms beautiful, and I felt all of this was celebrating today's show.
South Korea's vaccination rate is nearly 90%, with children now getting the jab.
At first, I was very scared of COVID as I felt it was life-threatening. But now I feel okay with it because I consider it an experience and a certain reality. Also, I worry less because of the vaccines and the new medications.
The cherry blossoms blooming has been tracked from Jeju Island in the south and up to the capital as warm weather moved north. And with this change in seasons, attitudes toward life with COVID are changing as well. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The first all-private space crew has successfully docked at International Space Station after spending over 20 hours en route. Three paying customers and a former NASA astronaut will spend 10 days aboard the ISS. The tourists will participate in scientific research, including stem cell experiments and exploring how the body ages in space. The civilian crew were launched into space in a SpaceX rocket from the Kennedy Space Center on Friday. The trip was brokered by Axiom Space, which is the U.S.-based startup that coordinates rocket rides and provides necessary training. It's not the first time paying customers have visited the ISS. Russia sold seats on a Soyuz spacecraft last year. But this is the first mission that includes a crew entirely comprised of civilians.
A new selfie museum in Sweden is flipping the script by making visitors both the artist and the exhibit. The establishment is dubbed the Museum and is in a shopping mall in Stockholm. Unlike other selfie museums, this one has no works of art on its walls. Instead, its brightly decorated rooms are meant to serve as fun backgrounds for visitors to take their selfies or shoot videos in. Other rooms let the visitors bury themselves in candy-colored foam bricks, strike a pose under neon lights, or sit on a huge colorful swing. The manager says the museum is interactive and lets the visitors be the artists themselves in order to create the art they want to see.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
Survey data estimates there were 28 to 31 million uninsured people in the U.S. in 2020, and as many as 14.4 million people will be at risk of losing their health insurance coverage when the public health emergency ends. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Sakshi Odovant's writer. This article is published under the heading Uninsured American People Are Left Behind. Here's more. After 2 years of free COVID-19 tests, vaccinations, and other healthcare resources during the pandemic, the U.S. government has run out of funding. Last month, the Biden administration wrote a letter to Congress asking lawmakers to provide $22.5 billion to keep the funding programs running across the U.S. Without the additional funding, it will leave Americans unequipped to deal with a future surge, the letter read. Since January 2022, more than 60 million households across the U.S. have ordered free at-home COVID-19 tests and had access to free testing sites across 21,500 locations around the country. U.S. residents also received free vaccinations and booster shots at 90,000 locations across the country. Moreover, areas populated by communities of color and low-income families have the highest demand for federally funded COVID-19 care. Those who don't use the clinics offered by the government typically go to hospitals, pharmacies, or health clinics for COVID-19-related services. But without the U.S. government funding, people without health insurance have limited options for seeking care and are forced to look for community-based